Many years ago, when I was at Yeshiva in Alon Shvut, Yeshiva Har Etzion, we had a class that was given on Damal Hashiv, anti-missionary ideas, challenges to Judaism from other religions, specifically from Christianity. So I remember I took that course, and when I got back to America, I used to go through, on the way to Yeshiva, I used to go from Passaic, come into New York, and I used to come through the Port Authority, the central bus station in New York City, and there were all kinds of strange people that used to hang out there. A lot of missionaries, Jews for Jesus, people who were trying to grab innocent souls and convert them. Anyway, one time someone came over to me and asked me, started up a conversation with me, and being all of 18 years old and thinking that I knew everything there was to know about comparative religion and theological questions, challenges from other religions, especially since I had listened into this class in the previous year. So I engaged him in conversation, and within a few minutes he realized that he wasn't speaking to somebody who was completely naive, completely unknowing, but rather I did have certain opinions and certain ideas to answer back to him. So he asked me if I would be amenable to coming and speaking to his teacher, to which I answered again, thinking that I knew everything. I said, sure, why not, and went out for coffee a few days later with somebody by the name of Jim, who was a preacher, I guess, within the organization, Jews for Jesus. I don't know exactly how the hierarchy works there. But we had a very interesting conversation. And he raised many, many issues, and they were interesting to me. Some of them I had seen before, some of them I hadn't. Nothing, thank God, too convincing, let's put it that way. But nonetheless, there was one thing that he raised, and that was, I thought, a very interesting challenge. He said, listen, there are two ways to salvation, to Olam Haba, if you will. And the Christians believe that, at least, one way is through faith, through grace, through the belief in Christianity and in that ideology, and so on and so forth. But the other way is through the law, through halacha, as the Old Testament, as they call it, the Torah, speaks about. But he says, but there's a problem if you choose the second way. If you choose the law, then you're essentially doomed to failure. And the reason is because there is no possibility of keeping the entire law. There's no one in the world ever, Ein Tzadik Ba'olam, who can go through life without sinning. And therefore, if you believe that the way to salvation is through keeping the commandments, keeping the mitzvot, keeping the law, you will never be able to live up to that, and you will be under the curse. So that's an interesting idea. And I didn't know then exactly what to make with it. I don't remember what I answered or what I didn't answer, but it was always something that stayed with me. And as years went by and I learned a little bit more, I realized that actually this was not Reverend Jim's invention, some rhetoric device, but it was actually a fundamental, central doctrine within Christian theology, and it's actually got a name. It's called the Doctrine of the Curse of the Law. And the first to put this forth, this idea, was actually one of the apostles, one of the students of Jesus, Paul. So Paul, as you may know, is a turning point in Christianity. Up until then, the missionizing was directed inwards at the Jewish people. And Paul came along and he turned this outwards to attempt to convert the pagans and the non-Jews. And actually, this is a blessing, in fact, because the main debate, the most difficult part that Chazal had with Christianity was specifically the attempts within the Jewish community to find adherents. And in fact, in the years after the Churban, between the Churban and the Mered Bar Kokhba, between the destruction of the temple in the year 70 and the Mered Bar Kokhba 60 years later, the Bar Kokhba revolt, the Jewish community within Eretz Israel, within Israel, was really infiltrated, if you will, in the very, very synagogues, in the shuls, in the community. There were Jews sitting next to Christian Jews, and this was very, very difficult for Chazal. How do you know who is a true rabbinic Jew, who is a Christian Jew? And in this period, you have the enactment of the Gezerot, of the Birkat Haminim, and many other Gezerot and fallout from this internal strife between Jews and Christian Jews. Once Paul came along, and the direction was no longer trying to missionize the Jews, but rather to go outside and try to find pagans and non-Jews, this was actually a blessing, and it lifted a lot of the social stress off of the Jewish community in Eretz Israel, and Christianity and Judaism went their separate ways. That's not to say that they were happy with each other. It's not to say that there wasn't persecution of Jews by the Christians, certainly later on, but at least in terms of wondering whether the person sitting next to you in shul was a min, or was a kofar, or was a Christian, that at least that onus was taken off of the Jewish community. So, back to our idea. Paul writes in a book called Galatians, and this is his speeches, his attempts to the people of the country of Galatia, which is probably in Turkey. So this is his attempt to introduce his theological doctrines to them and his ideology. So in Galatians, in the third chapter, Paul talks precisely about this idea that I was first introduced to by the Reverend Jim. And this is quoting from Galatians in English, 3:10. For as many as are of the works of the law are under a curse. That what he's saying is anybody who tries to live their life according to the law will necessarily, inevitably, be cursed. For it is written, and he quotes a pasuk, cursed is everyone who does not abide by all things written in the book of the law to perform them. Now, Paul is quoting a pasuk, and he's actually quoting a pasuk in this week's Parsha, in Parshas Ki Tavo. And the pasuk is, so let's just a little bit of background of what's going on here. Vayitzav Moshe ta'am bayomahu. Moshe, this is Perek Kaf Zayin. So Moshe says that when the Jews come into Eretz Israel, they will stand half of the nation on Har Grizim, half of the nation on Har Eval, and there will be blessings and there will be curses that are spoken out, and the entire nation has to answer Amen to all of these curses. And there are all these different various curses that are here. Arur, Arur ha'ish asher ya'aseh pesel u'masecha, cursed is the person who does avodah zarah, person who hits their mother and their father, masig gvorech, all these different things, mashge iver baderech, somebody takes advantage and fools a blind person, so on and so forth, v'amar kol ha'am amen, and the entire nation has to answer amen. And at the end of it, in Pasuk Kaf Zayin, so we're Perek Kafav, Pasuk Kaf Zayin, is the Pasuk that Paul is quoting. Arur asher lo yakim et divrei ha-Torah hazot, la'asot otam, ve'amar kol ha'am amen. Cursed is he who does not uphold the words of this Torah to do them, and all of the nation, all of the Jews said afterwards, Amen. Arur asher lo yakim et divrei haTorah hazot. Okay, so this is Paul's interpretation of this pasuk, of our pasuk in Parshat Ki Tavo. And I wonder, by looking at this pasuk, is Paul's interpretation justified? And in fact, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Asher lo yakim, kan kalal et kol haTorah kula, vikibua alehem be'ala uvishua. The Jewish people here accept as a curse on themselves, kalal et kol haTorah kula. This is a generalization of all of the Torah. So, at first glance, you would look at Rashi, and in fact, he seems to be saying, interpreting the pasuk, according to the same way that Paul did, that the entire Torah is here being expounded, if you will, or being included by the Jewish people under this curse. Aru asher lo'akim divrei haTorah zot, Rashi seems to be saying, cursed is anyone who doesn't keep any of the words of this Torah. And in fact, that is a problem, because how can anybody keep all of the Torah? So, this is actually something that caused me to wonder what precisely does Rashi mean. But more than that, it really does open up a door to Christian theologians as far as their idea of the curse of the law is concerned. The Ibn Ezra doesn't accept what Rashi says. He says, Aru asher lo yakim, yesh omrim kol haTorah. So some people say that this lo yakim et divrei haTorah means the entire Torah, like Rashi said. V'yesh omrim al ela nizkarim. And there are those that say, no, it's all these few curses that are in the pasuk, makle aviv imo, shochevim kol behema, all these different ones, mashke iver badarach, mateh mishpat ger, and so on and so forth. All of the different curses, the specific ones that are mentioned in all of Perek Kaf Zayin, these are the ones that we're talking about. V'lo amru klum, and the Ibn Ezra dismisses them. They didn't say anything. He doesn't accept that at all. Ba'avur shekatuv, why? Because he says, look at the end of the pasuk. This is some kind of a positive description of what is supposed to be done. To do them. What does the pasuk say? What does it mean when it says to do them? Says the Ibn Ezra, ki kalal al mitzvah lo ta'aseh hanizkarim v'kilel mi shelo yishmor gam b'seta mitzvot ta'aseh. Not only these specific mitzvot, or averot, I should say, lo ta'aseh, somebody who is mashke iviri, that's something that you shouldn't do. Matem mishpat ger v'yotam, somebody who is not doing justice with the ger, the sojourner, and the atom, and the orphan. Somebody who does that's a negative thing, right? Somebody who does not do the right, uphold justice, but rather does something that he shouldn't have done. That's one specific, all those specifics. But then, says the Ibn Ezra, there's also the mitzvot aseh. What if I don't shake a lulav in Esra? What if I don't build a sukkah? What if I don't eat matzah on Pesach? All these different lot aseh. So if a person doesn't do those, then that's the curse of asher lo yakim kan, asher lo yakim itivrei haTorah hazot la'asot otam. Okay. The truth is, even the Ibn Ezra here doesn't help very much in terms of Paul's challenge. Because whether you say that you have to keep every last little mitzvah in the Torah, like Rashi seems to say, or else you're under this curse, or whether you say that you have to keep every last little mitzvah aseh, every positive commandment, maybe there are people, probably many, who have failed in their life to do one or two of those mitzvot, even though they've been good people and kept Torah mitzvot in general. So does that mean that they are under this curse? Very, very difficult and very strange. So the place to go, if you want to understand how to respond to a challenge by Christianity and by Christian theology The place to go is the Perush of the Ramban. Rav Moshe ben Nachman. Nachmanides, and why do I say that? Because as many of you know, Nachmanides Ramban was involved in a famous debate called the Disputation of Barcelona in 1263, July 20th through 24th, in the year 1263, King James I of Aragon invited the Ramban to a debate, and the protagonist on the other side was someone by the name of Pablo Cristiani. He was a mishumad. He was somebody who changed his religion. He at one point was Jewish, and in fact, he comes from a religious family, and he left Judaism, became a Christian, and became one of the foremost anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic, and especially anti-Talmud figures in all of Christendom and in all of Christian history. And he was responsible for many, many, many horrible things that happened to the Jews, including the censorship of the Talmud, not to mention that he spent the life that he had as Pablo Cristiani doing his best to missionize and trying to convert Jews wherever and however he could. So this was the debate. And the of course, the Ramban didn't want to participate in the debate. And he knew he was being set up. And he said to King James, he said, well, what's going to happen? If I argue, then immediately you're going to blame me and call me a heretic and a blasphemer because I don't believe in Christianity. So I'm set up from the beginning that the minute that I raise any kind of an issue against Christianity, I'll immediately be held to put to death. So I have no way of defending myself on the one hand. On the other hand, if I can't speak freely, then how can I how can I participate in this debate? So King James actually gave him his word and a dispensation that anything that the Ramban said during this debate, he had every right to speak completely freely and say whatever he wanted to. Of course, respectfully, with respect to Christianity, of course, but still he could make any point that he would, and he was given a complete license to do so and would not be punished for it. In fact, this was really a trap that Pablo Cristiani had set for him, because at the end of the debate, although fully and roundly trounced by the Ramban, who won the debate, Pablo Cristiani's published the minutes, if you will, or the recorded textual recording, if you will, of the debate, where he makes it out to be that, of course, Christianity beat Judaism. So the Ramban had no choice other than to write a response refuting that. And he put this, and it's published, and you can find it in the Kitvei Ramban, where he wrote refuting, or his version, if you will, of the debate. And that was a problem, because Cristiani went to the Pope and showed him the writings of the Ramban that were completely heretical, of course, blasphemy, anti-Christian, and the Pope wanted him punished, killed. King James said, but I gave him license to speak freely. So Cristiani argued, you gave him the right to speak freely, but you didn't give him the right to put down on paper to write freely. And so, I guess against his will, I mean, there is actually a pretty good movie that was made about this whole thing, The Disputation, it's called, and you can find it online, I think even on YouTube. And you really get a good feel for the debate. It's actually an excellent movie. But at the end, the Ramban was punished by King James. He was not killed. He was sent into exile, and that's when the Ramban left Spain, Gerona, where he lived, and he went to Eretz Yisrael. That's when he came to Israel. Also, if you want to find out what a Jewish theologian, what Chazal, the greatest of the Rishonim and Parshanim, interpreters of the Torah, what do they answer to Christian challenges and attacks? The place to go is, of course, to the Ramban's Perush, because the Ramban, certainly in preparation for this disputation, for the debate, read widely and deeply Christian writings and theology, and I'm sure he spoke with many people. So what does the Ramban say on this pasuk? Arur asher lo yakim et divrei haTorah hazot. Well, the Ramban says, he brings down Rashi, kan kalal et kol haTorah kula, v'kibu aleihen ve'alau v'shvua lashon Rashi. So he brings down Rashi, it says it's the entire Torah. Any part of the Torah that somebody doesn't keep, they are under this curse, if you will, or at least they accept upon themselves the commitment to do it. It's a little bit different the way Rashi says it, but let's just, for now, assume that. Lefi da'ati, the Ramban says, I have a different opinion. And he goes on, ki ha-kabbalah hazot, what the Jews are taking upon themselves here, sheyodeh b'mitzvot b'libo, that a person admits to the mitzvot in his heart, v'yu be'enav emet, and he believes that these mitzvot are true, v'ya'amin sheha'oseh otan, yiyeh lo sachar v'tova, and that if he does do these mitzvot, then he will have benefit and be rewarded. V'ha'over alehen ya'aneshin, somebody who goes against these, somebody who transgresses these mitzvot, he will be punished. V'miachpor ba'achat mehen, but if a person denounces them and says it, that he does not accept any of them, or he says that they are no longer valid, that that they've gone from the world, they're betela. If he says something like that, hinehu arur, then he is cursed. Aval, but the Ramban says very, very clearly, im avar al achat mehen, but what if he transgressed one of the mitzvot? Kigon she'achal ha'chazir v'ashekitz l'tavato. He goes and he eats non-kosher food because he's hungry. He walks by a McDonald's and he smells the hamburgers and it's just amazing and he just needs to go in. He feels he can't hold himself back and he goes in and he has a hamburger. O she'lo asa sukkah v'lulav l'atzla. And here he's pointing out against the Eben Ezra. Or he mitzvah taseh. He didn't do a sukkah. He didn't grab the lulav and shake it because he was lazy. Such a person, says Ramban, einenu b'chayra mazeh. He is not under this curse. Ki lo amar ha-katuv asher lo yaseh et divrei haTorah hazot, because the Torah never said anybody who doesn't keep even one tiny little mitzvah, never said that. Ela amar asher lo yakim et divrei haTorah hazot. It says somebody who does not uphold these words of these Torah, of this Torah. Ketam kimu v'kibu hayudim. Like the Jews accepted in the time of Esther, kimu v'kibu hayudim, they accepted upon themselves. So what does it mean they accepted it upon themselves? They accept the system. They accept the fact that there are Torah and mitzvot, that there are mitzvot, that these are good things to do. I may, chas v'shalom, here and there, fail in keeping a mitzvah, but that's not the issue. The issue is, do I generally accept that this system, and this idea of keeping mitzvot is a good thing? That's what we have to do here. Asher lo yakim, one who upholds et divrei haTorah hazot, one who upholds the entire system. V'hineu cherem ha-mordim v'ha-kofrim, and the Ramban adds, and this curse is a curse of the rebellious and the apostates, the kofrim, those who deny and denounce. What I love about this Ramban is that not only, like a wrestler who finds himself caught and pinned down to the mat, and in one deft move wriggles himself not only out of the hold, but turns himself on top of his opponent and pins him to the mat and wins the match. That's what the Ramban does here. He not only deflects the challenge that Paul brings through this pasuk, but he turns it completely on its head and brings it back on the offensive against Christianity. What was Paul's argument? Paul said, if anybody doesn't keep the tiniest little mitzvah, he's under the curse. Well, says the Ramban, of course not. It doesn't mean if a person is weak or if a person makes a mistake or if a person doesn't keep this mitzvah or that mitzvah for any reason. Transgresses an avera, that's okay. That's not okay. I mean, you should try harder. And that's what Shuvah is for. And that's why we learn and we grow. That's the whole religion that we have. But to say that a person such as that, such a person who makes mistakes, is under this curse, that's ridiculous. And he shows it in a beautiful way from the words of the Pasuk. Asher lo yakim, he says. It doesn't say a person who doesn't keep a mitzvah. It's a person who doesn't uphold the system. The person who doesn't uphold the general idea of Torah and mitzvot. But then he says more. Because not only am I not under the curse. Okay, so that was a challenge of Paul. Anybody who keeps the Torah, anybody who chooses to keep the path of halacha, of Torah and mitzvot, to reach salvation, to reach Olam Haba, to get Sachar, to be rewarded, to come close to God. Anybody who chooses that way, well, by definition, he's going to fail. Says Raman, Chas V'Shalom, that's not true. This type of person is not under the curse. Who is under the curse? Who is it that doesn't uphold the system, that believes that these mitzvot are b'teila li'olam, that these mitzvot are no longer valid, that they are superseded, and that there's a completely new way of approaching God, not through law. Who is it that believes that? You, the Christians, Amor Din Val Kofrim. You are the ones, the Christians are the ones who are under this curse. So he not only gets away from applying the curse to Jewish people who keep Torah mitzvot, but he turns it topsy-turvy and says, the ones who are under this curse are davka, the ones who accept the ideology that Torah mitzvot has been superseded and that they are no longer a valid way of approaching God. They are no longer good. They are no longer a way of getting sachar. Absolutely, absolutely brilliant. The Ramban goes on, and at the end of this, his commentary here on this pasuk, he says something very strange. Very strange. Okay, and some people say that this curse is applied to people, the Chazan or the Gabbai, if you will, who doesn't put the Torah in a safe place so that it shouldn't fall. And that's Yakim is playing on the idea of hold, stand up, Yakim. So you didn't stand up the Torah properly and it fell, or you weren't careful about that, that's a person who's under this curse. And then the Ramban says like this, V'li nireh, that I believe that this verse is talking about al hachazan she'eino mekim sefer Torah al hatzibur leharot pnei ketivato lakol. This curse is talking about a person who doesn't pick up the sefer Torah to the tzibur, to the congregation, to show them the text, the letters that are written on the cloth, on the parchment. Kemo shemefurash b'masechet Sofrim, shemagbihim oto, umar'eh pnei ketivato la'am ha'omdim li'imino l'smolo, machziro lefanav u'acharav. And he's talking about Hagba here, right? The Masechet Sofrim talks about the fact that you're supposed to pick up the Sefer Torah, you take it to your right, show it to your left, and forward, backwards, you show to everybody in the congregation the words that are written on the Torah. Shemitzvah l'chol anashim v'hanashim, men and women have the obligation l'ot hakatuv, to see the actual text, l'chro v'lomar v'zot haTorah she'sam Moshe v'chein noagim. And everybody says, as we all know and we all do, we look at the Torah when it's picked up by Hagba and we say v'zot haTorah, this is the Torah that Moshe put before the Jewish people. Very interesting, but very strange. A person who doesn't do Hagba, that's who this curse is talking about. And even if you want to talk about Derech Haggadah, this is some kind of a hidden meaning, an allegory, whatever you want to call it, some kind of a message that's not pshat. But what is the Rabban trying to say here? And here I would like to suggest, and this is my own personal suggestion, I haven't seen it anyway. The beginning, I believe that the Ramban is absolutely, absolutely talking specifically to the Christian theology of the curse of the law, and answers it beautifully. I think that there's no way around saying that the Ramban absolutely is addressing that point. In this part, I'm a little bit less sure. But I would like to suggest, kanireh, already in the time of the Ramban, 1200s, the idea, the minhag of Hagbah, maybe was not so widespread, maybe it was more widespread, less widespread. It's clear that it's not universal, I think, like it is in our generation. But I wonder to myself, if I could put myself in the shul in Girona, a tiny shul where people come every Shabbos, every day, they come to daven. And as they come to daven in this tiny shul in Girona, or in Barcelona, or all over Europe, and they walk into the shul, and on the way they pass by this cathedral, 500 times larger than their shul, with a magnificent facade, stained glass windows, you know, with thousands of people that come in there on Sunday. And they come, and they pass by another cathedral, and they pass by another one on the way to shul. And they come into their tiny little shul, literally surrounded by a sea of Christians who are telling them, your law is no longer valid. And think of the proof that the Christians have. You just passed three magnificent cathedrals in the one block, two blocks that you walked here. Look at Christianity. Its hand is clearly so much stronger than that of any other religion, and certainly that of Judaism. So who do you think God has chosen? And this is such an impossible challenge to refute. There is no refutation other than emunah, faith. And the Jews would come into this shul, and they would sit there, and they would daven. And when the Torah was read, and it was picked up, and people pointed at the Torah and said, "Vizot haTorah asher sam Moshe." I believe that echoing in their ears was another "Vizot haTorah," namely that of the Rambam, of Maimonides, who wrote in the Ikarei Amunah, in the 13 Principles of Faith, "Ani ma'amin be'emunah shleima shezot haTorah lo tehei mukhlefet velo tehei Torah acheret me'eta borei yitbarach shemo." I believe with perfect faith that this Torah, Zot HaTorah, will never be changed. And this Torah, there will never be any other from God, from the Creator of the world. When the Jews pointed at the Torah during Hagbah, they were essentially defying the millions upon millions of Christians who claimed that they were wrong. And in essence, were precisely doing what the Ramban said. They were being mekim et divrei haTorah hazot. They upheld the law, whether they would go out later on and by accident or by weakness or for whatever reason, they transgressed an avera or they didn't keep a mitzvah, but they upheld the system of the law. They upheld and they kept absolutely faithful to the fact that this Torah, Zot HaTorah, was the one true and eternal Torah. And I think that's what the Ramban is saying by bringing down the idea of Hagbah in the context of the refutation of Paul's doctrine of the curse of the law. Hagbah, the Zot HaTorah Asher Sam Moshe, is absolutely the words of the Jews that defies the Christian theology of superstition session and the Christian theology that the law, the halakha, Torah and mitzvot as we know it, is no longer the way and the approach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to God. Shabbat Shalom.